Then welcome to your Love No Show. Radio. And good evening once more and again. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to your No Show, the show where we talk about how it is that things are going in life for you, what it is that you're excited about, what helps you to get up in the morning, what keeps you moving in spite of some of the challenges in life that we can occasionally have bounce into our lives. We all know what those are. We don't have to go over them. We don't have to talk about them. We just know that they exist. But we also are aware of the fact that we have friends. We have people who are traveling along with us in order to support us and for us to support them in making that journey a little more palatable, a little more easy to absorb some of the bumps and the bruises, to expand our shock absorbers to the extent that those little bumps along the road don't bother us like they used to. And so that is why it is that we are here this evening, and we are excited that we have the number of folks with us online to talk about this phenomenal subject of our ability to relate one to the other in 2016 and beyond. And I say 2016, meaning the remainder, because the year is already half gone. And somebody help me with it, because I don't know where it went. But some of the folks who are on the line with us are smarter than I am, and they will be able to tell us, because I just don't know. We are excited to have so many people who are going to be part of our conversation this evening, so many folks who are wanting for you to know what life is all about and how it is that we show up to support each other and what that is all about. We are talking tonight about race relations in America. And right here, specifically for many of us who are online in Little Rock, Arkansas, for others who are in California, for others who are in Seattle, Washington, Washington, D.C., Florida, and all over the continental U.S. and outside as well, because this show goes all across the globe, and we are pleased that all of you decided to join us, decided to be here to share your thoughts relative to race relations and what is going on in the world right now. We are excited that you decided to take a few of your LPEs, your life's precious energy, and to spend it in this way. Each and every one of us has the same 60 minutes per hour, and we have the same amount of energy that we can devote to whatever it is that we choose. So this is part two. We had a rousing time last week, and so I am excited that all of the folks that are a part of our experience right now, and many who are going to join us as we go along, will be with us this evening. We are talking again about race relations in America, and right here in my home, on my block, up and down my street, across the river, because the Arkansas River separates Little Rock from North Little Rock, in Washington, D.C., where Anacostia is separated from Capitol Hill, in the Northeast, other spaces where there is a divide. But we are talking tonight about a racial divide. And so we want to go ahead and get right into it. And as others join us, we will welcome them as well to be a part of our discussion. Let me first bring Carrie Kelly, my capable sidekick, into our discussion. and find out what it is that she thinks about this subject and what she got from our last visit last week on race relations. Good evening, Carrie. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for your willingness to bring this subject up and have a discussion. I was really impressed last week with our guest. And the one comment that I will put out there is a quote that I saw, and I wish I could remember who said it and exactly how it went, but the sentiment is that sin will happen in the dark, but you don't blame the sin on the dark. You blame it on the ones who turned off the light. And when I think of that saying, it puts me in mind of the systemic problems that comes from the devaluation of some of the races that are considered inferior and the systemic consequences of all of that. And once we are able to look at that and admit that and talk about it all the way from start to finish, then we may have a chance to fix it.
Absolutely. We can fix it. We can fix that which we are aware of so that we then can bring all of the opportunities and the people and together to then found and share the solutions to those challenges. How applicable and apropos is that? Thank you so much. I really appreciate your words on that subject. Of course, many people were with us last week, and some of the folks that were with us last week will not be with us this week, and others are brand new to the scene here and will get an opportunity to share with us from their perspective. Let me just welcome Joyce in, who was with us last week, and to say good evening to her and find out what her thoughts were relative to last week's conversation and what thoughts she has for us going forward. Good evening, Joyce. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thoroughly enjoyed the discussion last week and the communication and the insight that each person brought from their own home area and experiences. We appreciate the comment that was just made that what's done in the dark, if light is not shown on it, stays in the dark and has a chance to really do some serious harm. And race relations in this country and in our home is a subject that causes discomfort to many. And I think many people think if we just ignore it, we can go on like we're going, but things either get better or they get worse. And this seems to be a time when race relations are uprising and getting just a little bit worse. And so it is up to us at this time to identify those things that we can do to bring some sanity, some justice, and some fairness to situations, even on a small scale or right close to us, which will have a ripple effect and spread throughout the country. And I guess we could name many things, from killings to denial of rights to laws and rules to murders and people lying in the street. And those are the things that we really need to address as quickly as possible. We know that the laws sometimes don't help us with that, so we have to look for other strategies.
And the law exists because we have created the law. We want to have certain rules and regulations that we all abide by, But we do that from the basis of understanding that the law is there to support us, not to undergird us or challenge us in such a way that that something then has to be done. But if that does happen, then we do realize that we want to do away with that particular law in the way that it is being used, and we come together to have a conversation around it as well. Thank you so much, Joyce. We are pleased that you are with us this evening. I want to welcome a new member to our discussion, a gentleman that I have had the pleasure of meeting a couple of weeks ago, Zach. We are so pleased that you decided to join us this evening and to conversate around this subject. You, too, have a radio program in the city that broadcasts worldwide. And I want for you to tell the people who it is that you are, a little bit about your program, and then what your thoughts are in terms of our subject this evening. Good evening, Zach. How are you?
Yes, I'm well. Thank you for having me. My name is Zachary Crow. I co-host a radio show called Barbershop with a good friend and mentor, Judge Wendell Griffin, who I believe was with you last week, if I'm not mistaken. And,
That's right.
Yeah. The two of us co-host a show called Barbershop where we talk about issues of social justice affecting our city and state. We've talked about issues of police brutality, public education, lots of different topics associated around these issues, and would love for folks to join us in that conversation. The show, again, is called Barbershop. It airs here in Little Rock on KABF on Saturday mornings. Personally, I want to acknowledge that I enter this conversation as a person of great privilege. I'm male, I'm straight, I'm white. And so for me, much of my last 10 years particularly has been about learning to acknowledge that privilege, learning to deconstruct or attempt to deconstruct the learned and inherited racism that I've received as a white person in America. Much of that work has been placing myself under mentorship and learning from folks who are unlike me in many ways, learning from folks who are marginalized or oppressed in one way or another. I've worked a lot with folks in prison. I care very greatly about issues of mass incarceration. So that's a little bit about me, a little bit about what I bring to this conversation.
Absolutely, and we are indeed pleased that you are here. There are several of us here who are older than others. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of you who are half the ages of many others of us. And I am so grateful and so thankful that that, in fact, is the case, because we want to hear from those who are experiencing things differently, those folks who know how to use iPhones and computers and all of these other types of things that a few of us, certainly your host, is from time to time challenged by and challenged with. But this is what it is all about, all of us coming together to then have an open, honest conversation with each other that then says, help me to understand this. and allow me to help you to understand other things, and then we will all grow together in wonder-filled and wonderful ways. So, Zach, I am so pleased that you are here, that you joined us. It was my pleasure to call into your program on Saturday and to enjoy you and Judge Griffin talking about subjects that we all in our communities need to talk about, and addressing issues that when people are able to communicate, then it eliminates the shadow from the conversation, and it allows us to be grateful one to the other. So, Zach, welcome and thank you, and this will be the first, I am certain, of many times to come. Let me go down the street just a little bit to see Will Mercer, a very good friend of mine, who has written the book Courage, Conviction, and Consciousness, 365 Days of Inspiration from the Women of New Thought, Reverend Dr. C. William Mercer. And this is a huge and wonderful book, and there are women, this is all about women, and it's an annual pilgrimage, if you will, daily, that we talk to and talk about. And I think that I really wanted Will in on this conversation because of his background, because of his history, and because he's an old dude like me. So I did not want to feel all alone, and because of that, I did invite him and a couple of others who I will share are also around my age. C. Will Mercer, good evening, my friend, and how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Robert. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I really come tonight as a retired attorney and also as someone who lives in Harlem, New York, and has for the last 8 years. I'm part of a biracial marriage. I'm the white half of that marriage. And I recognize clearly that my work has to do with how I deal with the white population in Christian New Thought, which does not want to hear anything about white privilege. When we talk about it in loving ways, and I do believe that love is the only answer to this problem, the answer that I get most of the time from them is, oh, I'm not part of that. That happened before I was born. We are all one. All lives matter. You know, which to me are denials of the reality of white privilege and the default that occurs anytime there is a question of race raised in this country. I have very strong feelings about living up to the spirit of the law as well as the letter of the law. And I was a child of that civil rights movement that involved the 1964 Act, and feel that we have been betrayed by our society in believing for some years, at least within my narrow white frame, that change was occurring, only to find out in 2008 that it had simply been under the surface and now is raging again. And I am an oldster. I have some years yet to give, and I believe that it is my responsibility and my mission to work with my own white race and those people with whom I am in contact to change hearts and minds, because I believe that without that change, changes in law don't mean a lot, as we have witnessed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right, because we are the law. We are. Whether we realize it or not, recognize it or not, deal with it accordingly or not, we in fact are the law. And so it is important that we are both judge, jury, and participant. And in so much as for those of us who do follow a faith walk, regardless of whether it is Christian or if it is Muslim or if it is any of the other hundreds of philosophies by which people operate, there are certain things that are standard and that we all can agree upon. So that's the place where we start. We start with the things that we agree upon, and we move from there. And oftentimes, after we have done that, then the things that we thought we disagreed about become so small and so insignificant that we kick them to the curb, as my grandbabies say. And it then bothers us no more. And we realize that, like some laws that are on the book, on the books of our various cities and states and our country, they are obsolete. And so what we are wanting to do and needing to do is to move forward in wonderful and wonder-filled ways that will allow us to grow exponentially and then continue to be about our father and our mother's business in wonderful ways. Thank you, C. Will. I'm so glad that you are here with us. Let me come down the street just a little bit to another gentleman that is also a very, very good friend of mine. I did invite people who are not my friends so that you all will know, but they decided to not show up. And I'm honest when I say that. And the reason that I did that and I do that is because I want to understand how it is that other people think. If I talk to people who are just like me all the time, I am not getting anything but what I already know. So I want to hear people who have something to say, who can say it in a way that will help me to understand where it is that they are coming from so that we can all then move forward. Let me see if Jeff is on the line. Good evening, Mr. Jeff. Jeff is the Minister of Music for the Unity Church in Little Rock, Arkansas. And by way of acknowledgement and admission, Jeff is also one of my business partners. So I just want to get that out there as well. Good evening, Jeff. What are your thoughts on this timely subject that we are discussing?
Well, it's hey, Robert, I'm glad to be with you all for sure and listen to all these folks. It saddens me very much on a personal level that in some ways I really thought our society was a lot further along maybe than we apparently are, and we may be still. We may be just having some blips on the screen in the way of looking at it, but so much of this stuff, as you know, through our repeated conversations, I look at from a very personal frame as a musician and all the wonderful gifts that I have received from African-American culture, including the agony of the slaves themselves, that agony has produced the world's music at this point in time. That doesn't let anybody off the hook for the injustices, the terrible injustices that were occurred, but somehow it transmuted into beauty down the line. And as a spiritual person, I've got to believe that, which does not let me off the hook or anybody else off the hook in terms of my walk on earth. Because, as you know, I'm a recovering person, and I frequently go to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of my favorite quotes is, it refers to God, of course. It's an older book. It refers to God in the masculine, but it says he, meaning the Lord. We believe he would like us to have our head in the clouds with him, but our feet firmly on the earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work is to be done. And I do believe as a society we have a lot of work to do, beginning with me. And recognizing, yeah, I'm Caucasian, and that there is white privilege, and there's always been white privilege in this country, and that I think when people are conquerors, generally speaking, privilege is going to attach to whoever the conquering people are. I will say this about our country. At least it seems like we have got some people that are waking up and understanding we need to let go of that privilege. We need to recognize for what it is that it's not good for anybody. And as you know, I wrote a little tune sort of about this stuff. So, and I've been rolling this way for a long time. I played a job in Memphis last night, and I can't go over there at all. I think about Dr. King a lot, which is what the song is about. But I certainly can't go to Memphis without remembering Dr. King and his assassination over there. And I love Stax music with all my heart. I grew up with it as a kid. It was a magical time for me and I think for our country. And after Dr. King was assassinated, that beautiful, fully integrated music company never was the same after that. It's how it was. So that's what I've got to offer on the subject. I do think we have made progress. I'm not going to deny that. I believe we have. But I think we got a long way to go. And as a musician, I do what I do. That which is mine to do, as you and I refer to constantly. And I'm also a therapist, but my main way that I roll is through music. And I believe in our culture, music is a very powerful, potent place. And to me, two places you can look to that integration has truly, in fact, worked, and that there is very little privilege remaining, is the military and in the entertainment business. I'm not saying it's completely disappeared, but it's made a lot of progress.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great. Well, we are glad that you are with us, my friend, for sure. And any of you who would like to hear more of that tune by Jeff and Amanda, you may go to my Facebook page, because it is there, and you can hear it in its entirety. You may get to hear a little bit of it tonight as well. But go to my Facebook page, Robert J.V. McMillan, and you may hear that there. Speaking of Amanda, I do want to bring her in and again ask her to share with us who it is that she is. Tell us all about all of the great things that are going on in your life and what your thoughts are as well upon this subject, Amanda, because you are a little bit younger than Jeff and I are. And a couple of the other folks that are on the line as well. And so that is to me, part of the why that it is so important to have you involved in this conversation, because of the fact that our age difference, sometimes we who are a little bit older can get stayed, and we can our biases and our prejudices sometimes have been there for so long that we don't even realize it, and it takes somebody else to make us aware that in fact is the case, so that we can then change it. So, Amanda, welcome to the No Show. So pleased that you are here with us. Tell us where it is that you're from, what it is that you are. I know you're from Little Rock originally, but you've been in Missouri there for a little while, and you're going back and forth. So tell us a little bit about you, who it is that you are, what you're doing here, and then what your thoughts are relative to our subject for this evening. Good evening.
Hello, Robert. I'm a ministerial intern at Unity of Little Rock on Reservoir Road, and that's what I've been doing for the past few years. And I feel very honored to be a part of this community, and I'm very humbled by the participants in this discussion. And I'm so thrilled that we are bringing the light of our awareness to this issue, because our lack of awareness is what is perpetuating it. And that actually, I'm also very glad that, you know, Will Mercer talked about working in a new thought community, trying to encourage whites to acknowledge their privilege. And that has also been a challenge in our community, and I think personally, because there's a concept called white fragility, which has to do with an unwillingness and very low tolerance for tolerating racial discussions, because there's a sense in which if I acknowledge that I have privilege, that I am, you know, saying that, oh, I'm participating, I am culpable for everything that's going on. But, you know, that is an uncomfortable space. But it's not about putting guilt on any one particular person. Even if it makes us uncomfortable, we have to be willing for the nation to listen, to learn, and to act. I've been watching conversations on social media and Facebook where, you know, white people are reacting very defensively to the things that are going on. And I watch over and over people begging, please just listen, be willing to listen. And it's a symptom of our privilege that we feel like we can walk away from the conversation about race, whereas people of color have no ability to do that because they're living the consequences of that lack of awareness, of having their power taken away. And I want people to know that one of Unity's beliefs is that we are all children of God, that we are all powerful, that by changing how we think about something, that we can impact all of life and certainly transform the system that is oppressing people, rather than responding with violence. Because violence, I believe, is one of the things that makes racism possible. It's what hatred and violence underpin a system of oppression that has been torturing us as a nation and as a species, as human beings. And great leaders like Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi brought love to totally transform that system, nonviolence, nonviolent communication. Because violence doesn't begin with action. It begins in thought, it begins in speech, and then it escalates. We manifest it in the world. So if we can change that thought to openness, to love, to acceptance, we change the speech and we change our actions. And that will help, I believe, bring healing to this situation. So that's one of our positions at Unity.
That's excellent. Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you so much. So as all of us can see, we have a phenomenal set of folks that are here to talk about this subject, and I really appreciate all of you for sharing in the way that you are, and I'm wanting for you to know that what you say counts. Everything matters to all of us, and we are so grateful to know that this type of communication can exist. And I'm sure that each and every one of you has made some notes, as I have, from some of the things that others were saying. And so we're going to do a little bit of a round robin and talk about what it is that you have gotten from what the other person said and what it was that you thought about saying after I turned your mic off. Because, you know, those thoughts come to us after we no longer have the opportunity to voice it, right? I mean, don't we all say, boy, I wish I had said that. Boy, I wish I still had that microphone open so that I could talk about this or talk about that. So make those notes. The other thing that I would like to ask of those of you who are part of our conversation but have not done so on the telephone line is to press 1 on your phone if you would like to make a statement or ask a question, and then that will alert me to know that you would like to do that, and I will bring you back into our conversation. But unless you do that, then we will assume that you just simply want to sit there and be okay with that and with this process. But if you want to say something and you have not hit 1 on your telephone, please do so right now so that we can bring you into the conversation with all of us. And we appreciate the fact that you are here now. Let me also say that Judge Wendell Griffin did send me a note sharing that he would not be able to participate in this evening's session as well. So want to acknowledge that for those of you who might have been wondering why it was that you haven't heard his voice when the communique did, in fact, indicate that he would be speaking as well. So that's the deal on that. A couple of things that were said that I really want for us to pick up on. We talked about privilege, white privilege specifically, and then someone mentioned white fragility. I think who was it that brought, I think it was Amanda that brought that up, white fragility, that whites do not want to say that they are privileged. And if I'm wrong, anybody, just please correct me, because I want to attribute that to the right person. And then the other thing that Amanda did say was that discomfort brings conversation. And that is so true. Oftentimes we will get so sick and tired of being sick and tired that we then move in ways that are contrary to being helpful to us at the time, but we feel good about it because something had to be done. So that's why we're having this conversation tonight, so that we can nip things in the bud that need to be nipped, and we can be about the business of doing things in wonder-filled and wonderful ways that, in fact, need to be done. Let me go back to Carrie Kelly for a moment, who is in the Oakland, California area, and I would like to know from you, Carrie, are you all having those same types of conversations in Oakland, San Francisco, in the California Bay Area, as we are having here? We think of you guys as being much more progressive than we are, and even the black folks have suntans. So is that in fact the case, that you all don't have the same types of challenges that we have, Carrie?
Well, actually, the challenges that we are having are called gentrification. And
okay.
Things like affordable housing and school preferences. And so, like, that's what's going on in my neck of the woods. Rent and housing is beginning to be so expensive that people that have lived in the area for generations are now finding it difficult to stay there. And there's situations with landlords and company corporations who have decided that certain areas need to be gentrified. So the people that have been living there may need to be removed. So and that kind of changes the demographic of what the area might look like ethnically. So, and you know, we can, like what I said before, there is a systemic element that this is not new. This is just the latest terminology and the latest round of policies and procedures put in place by local governments, actually, that are perpetuating this situation. So, you know, and I just want to ask, once people acknowledge or recognize that they have white privilege, is there a plan or a discussion about how to spread that privilege to non-white, or is it just a matter of let's discuss the fact that we have it, and now that we've acknowledged it, let's move right along and, you know, go to the next thing?
Wow, that's a great question. Excuse me. And I want to open that one up to the floor, but let me go to Will Mercer first and ask him to handle that one. And then what I'm going to do is go to Joyce and hear her comments on that same thing, and then to Zach, okay? So Will, and then Joyce, and then Zach. Will, you heard Carrie's question. Once recognized by whites and people of color, I assume, what is it, how is it then that can be changed? What is it that can be done to eliminate that vacuum?
I believe, Robert, that white privilege is so much the default in this country that it takes an enormous amount of effort to break through the fragility that Amanda referred to get people to even acknowledge that it exists, because in many cases they are not aware of it until they are faced with a specific issue. For example, many people will tell you that they favor full equality. However, if their grandson Johnny doesn't get accepted to the right university because three people of color, maybe Asian, African American, and Hispanic, rank higher in academic success than Johnny does, then they're all about Johnny receiving his white privilege and not being denied on the basis of what they would refer to as reverse racism, which does not exist, as the reason for their child or their grandchild's failure to receive his due. So there is an enormous pressure on people to recognize the truth of white privilege and racism as it exists. I also want to make one other comment, if you will, and that is in response to what Jeff had to say. And I respect Jeff's opinion a great deal. I'm close to a gentleman named Andrew Hacker, who wrote a book in 1993 called Two Nations, Separate, Hostile, and Unequal. And it's the follow-up book to what Gunnar Myrdal did in 1945, which is the follow-up to what de Tocqueville did in 1831. And I asked him that specific question, if we had actually made progress since the time of Myrdal and the time of the Civil War and so-called emancipation. And his comment was this. He said, if you keep the goalpost in the same place, then one might believe that we have made progress. If we recognize that societal progress is a matter of a moving goalpost, he said, we are no better off than we were in 1915. So while we may not find strange fruit in the orchard, we incarcerate at rates that are phenomenally high. We do in institutional ways what we no longer do out on the farm. So while I believe that many of us would like to believe that progress has been made, I would doubt that many in the black community would agree based on current circumstance and the news that we all have to deal with day after day.
Do you feel, well, that you have, that your eyes have been opened because you fell in love with this beautiful woman who just happened to have been a woman of color? And did you at that point start to look at things differently, or had you already started to look at things differently and therefore this beautiful person came into your life?
I believe that my views have not changed dramatically. They have become more intense.
Okay.
Because I see racism from both sides of the fence, if you will. When we are here in Harlem in the early days, and I do live with her in Harlem, New York, there was a great deal of subtle racism that was generated toward her for being with me. When we have traveled the west side of Cleveland, Ohio, where I come from initially, I have felt racism against her for being with me.
By black people. Are you saying by black people?
By white people. Racism against her for being with me. And a big question in my direction as to, you know, what in the hell are you doing with her? We would walk into a restaurant in West Cleveland and all conversation in the restaurant would stop. Now, that's 2006, 2007, 2008. Things have changed perhaps somewhat. And certainly they have changed here in New York because this is a much more cosmopolitan area. And although gentrified, to Amanda's point, also diversified pretty dramatically so that we don't look out of place when we go hand in hand down the street. You know, have my ideas changed? Yes. In intensity and also in breadth. I admit to a passivity around white privilege because I did not feel it. I lived for many years in Denver, Colorado, which did not have a terribly large African-American population. So it was somewhat less visible to me during those years than it is in New York or than it would be in the South. But nonetheless, as I said, I'm a child of the 60s, and I believed that the law that was passed in 64 was a sign of progress. And all it did truly, in my estimation, is drive discriminatory attitudes underground until a time when a justice in the Supreme Court would feel able to diss the president during a State of the Union address. When the President of the United States referred to as a POS, and those of you who don't know what that means don't need to hear it from me.
And me
either. A little bit of disrespect around the presidency goes a long way with me, and it's terribly disturbing to see what we have now before us as a real backlash, I believe, to what has been pretty remarkable progress by the Obama administration, although not admitted by many people. The reality, as Carter, will be known years from now.
I agree. I agree with you. Awesome. I like what you are saying, my friend. I am not surprised that you're a friend of mine. Stand by, Sewell, if you will. I want to bring Joyce in and then Zach to make comments. And then we do have another person that wants to get into this conversation. And before I do that with Joyce, let me remind you all that this is the Renford Broadcast Radio Network. We have a plethora of phenomenal shows, and all of them are about the business of spirituality and moving forward through understanding and wisdom and direction. We invite you to, at any time, please come back and visit the Renford Broadcast Network and take a look at the shows that are available for you. There are many, and you will do yourself very, very, very good work by just checking all of those out. Of course, you know about the No Show. You are here with me often, but there are many, many, many others as well. And we want for you to come back again and again and again and tell your friends about it. Tell other people about it, because that is how it is that we are able to do what it is that we do. So we're excited that you're with us this evening talking about something that we feel is critical to who it is that we are and where it is that we need to go. Joyce, good evening. I wonder what your thoughts are based upon what you have heard since I last invited you into the conversation.
This has to be unpacked at a future time, but listening to those who have spoken, if you're familiar with Howard Thurman at all, you know that he speaks to people who live life on the underside, who are disinherited, whose backs are against the wall, who are treated with less than dignity and justice, and they are powerless. So he talks about them, and we are tracked or followed by the hounds of hell. And the hounds of hell are fear, hypocrisy, and hate. And those hounds of hell are built into our system of living and operating here, and they're built into our laws. And as long as those hounds of hell track and trail the disinherited and the people who live life on the margins, we will not see any real progress. You know, when we think we've seen progress, what we have seen, according to Alan Buzak, and Alan worked very hard with Bishop Tutu, and Alan penned and wrote the law that was presented to so that the South Africans could not practice their religion until apartheid was dismantled. And he spent some time in prison. And in his book, Radical Reconciliation, he calls that political pietism. And there will be no reconciliation, which is what will bring true change, until political pietism is broken down. And that Christians and others who stand by and watch it practice Christian quietism. So he talks about political pietism and Christian quietism as being things that keep these hounds of hell tracking us in this society so that the disenfranchised will stay oppressed. And the level of, yes. And so those are two ideas that both of these men present in books available that are visible in all realms of society here. That's why people don't even understand that white privilege is built into our laws and our system, our economic systems, our educational systems, our judicial systems, and all the systems in this country. It is planned, and it is operating as it was designed to operate.
Wow.
Whether it's gentrification or whatever.
That is food for thought, and that is why it is that we are here. Right now. Thank you, Joyce. Zach, what are your thoughts in terms of what you are hearing and what has been formulated and moving around in your head since we last spoke with you?
Sure. Well, I would say first is an acknowledgement that white supremacy is fundamentally ingrained with the fabric of the American empire. And from the beginning, whiteness is something that was not a concept for a long time. We don't see whiteness as a way of categorizing people until the 1600s. It's not written into law until 1691, largely as a way of winning over poor and working class folks, and is very much birthed out of this notion of Pax Americana, you know, peace between those peace between peace among America. And so I first want to acknowledge that whiteness as a way of controlling poor folks, whiteness as a way of categorizing ourselves into racial and economic classes is a deliberate and fairly new concept in the history of America. And so first I would just acknowledge that we didn't get here by mistake. And I would also say that for me, as a white person, to come to terms with my own white privilege, the ways that I have been and have been made complicit in systems of oppression, means putting some skin in the game. I think often this notion of allyship, white folks being allies to people of color, is really flawed for me. It often allows white folks to stay in places of privilege, to not place their feet in the street or put any skin in the game. It's why I appreciate so much several folks from the Black Lives Matter movement in recent years calling out that word, calling out that concept, because allyship is prone to ally theater, where we can express our discontent as white people and then remain in that place of privilege. And so I particularly have been encouraged by Black Lives Matter and their call for comrades instead of allies, because comrade
right. Absolutely.
Implies some sense of action, some sense of risk.
That's right.
And,
that's
yeah.
right. Excellent. Thank you, Zach. I appreciate that. Folks, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to close out with the song by Different Shades of Brown by Amanda, who is on the phone with us, and Jeff, who is also on the phone. So I want to close out with that. But, Amanda, I want to give you about 30, 40 seconds to just share what your thoughts are about hearing what you've said. And then however long you take to do that will determine how much people get to hear your song. I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but what are your thoughts from what you've heard today? And thank you for being here.
Well, I really appreciate that, you know, both Zach and Carrie and Joyce and Will have all been talking about the importance of action, that it's not just about setting an intention or even beginning the dialogue. It's about, you know, putting feet, what we call putting feet to the prayer, so that our intentions are completed through our actions. And I just want to really hold that for all of us, for all people, that this is not only a call to discussion but a call to action.
Absolutely.
I'd like to emphasize that.
Thank you, my dear. I appreciate it. Let me thank all of you for being with us, because you had choices. And you could have been elsewhere, but you chose to be here. And I'm very glad that you did. We're going to go out with Different Shades of Brown. We'll be right back here next week with a different topic. And in a couple of weeks, we'll come back and hit this one all over again. Thanks
open
so much, everybody.
Open up your eyes, open up your mind and heart. Hear the sound, hear the call. Don't be surprised when you find you're just a part of it all. So look around, we're all just different shades of brown. Martin Luther King was born in 29.
A Southern man who earned fame and renown.
like to name and label and judge things black or white.
Because of this, Christ wore his thorny crown.
But the Master spoke of love and lessons from the light,
illuminating different shades of brown.
Open up your eyes, open up your mind and heart. Hear the sound, heed the call. Don't be surprised when you find you're just a part of it all. So look around, we're all just different shades of brown. From eternal love, God's children all are made.
And by God's truth, we all are honor bound.
And yes, it is a fact. We come in many shades.
And yet it's merely skin in different shades of brown.
Dr. King had dreams of freedom. He showed us how to share. His courage rang the bell of freedom.
We're all just different shades of brown. Jeff Long and Amanda Black. Thank you, folks, for a wonderful evening. God bless. Take care. Create a great day. And may tomorrow be everything you want and need for it to be. Bye, everybody. Thank you. God bless.